SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good post-classic season Monday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. And what a day, what a 3 days, what a week in New York, what a 5 weeks. Breeders' Cup season. Breeders' Cup season. Classic Triple Crown season. The lead up, the classic trail season. All come to a head Friday and Saturday. And as always, just so much to absorb and discuss and dissect. The performances that we anticipated, I think you had a lot of the things that we more or less expected, right? Expected that one of the three-year-old trainers was going to win two of the three Triple Crown races, and they did. Lot thought that it was going to be Bill Mott. Kept reminding that it could have been Mark Cassie, and that's who it was. Sir Winston, who had the breeding, had the preparation. You could see, you know, had enough people saying how well he was getting over the track. You had Cassie talk this week, and after he had performed several times, really. We discussed Sir Winston and Ron Anderson, Joel Rosario, Mike Welch, who was taken with him the way he was preparing. And I'm pretty sure that I mentioned how Zoe Cadman loved the way he was getting over the track. And it paid off in a Belmont win that provides Tracy Farmer, who's been around the game 20-plus years, has had more than 20, and has had any number of nice horses, particularly in New York. And you think about his association, long, successful association with Nick Zito and commentator, and Sir Shackleton was a personal favorite, Sun King, favorite of Andy's. Andy loved Sun King, and so forth. And the period that most recently that Tracy Farmer was away from very active participation when he was working in the role with the KHRC, and when that ended, he's gotten back involved heavily, and what a nice reward this is with a homebred, second generation. The bought a mare early on in his involvement, and a Fleet Dancer, and then got the Grand Balladora, who then produced Sir Winston. So that's got certainly a special feeling. And we, even talked with John Parada and with Sid. Yeah, and great job by Sid. Sid with three of the four finishers in the Super. Sir Winston, Tacitus, and Tax were Sid pushes. Jovia got in the way, and what a race he ran. We'll talk plenty about Sir Winston and the tremendous Rosario ride. And the more you watch your Belmont replays, the more impressive, not just Joel, but Sir Winston himself was. Every time Rosario asked him, he responded, and it's more than twice. This is a very good horse. I know the figure came back, you know, very moderate, as increasingly it does in these mile and a half races at this time of year for the 3-year-olds. But it was a good performance. People obviously discussing Tacitus and the wide trip. That gets us into the whole overview of the very fast racetrack and some wide interpretation and some wide misinterpretation of how the racetrack was, because you better pack up your snap judgment and go very carefully. Watch replays. Watch them with the charts in your hand. Take a look very carefully, because there's going to be, you know, one of the major parts of this, these festival days that we talked last week, when they stack these races up, there's almost too much to have to, you know, go back and get a handle on when it comes to the trips and the paces and who benefited, who didn't. Now, I suppose the positive is that, you know, the heavy concentration of races, you put the turf races together in one pile and you put the dirt races together in another pile and figure it out. But it don't make any foolhardy conclusions like the track was biased. It was totally speed. No, it actually, it wasn't. It wasn't. It's a gold rail. The inside was certainly the good place to be. But if the track was so biased, how come Dancing didn't wire? How come Colfront didn't wire the field? How come Strike Silver didn't go on and wire the field? How did Stalkers and Off the Pace horses do so well? Bizu, Midnight Bizu's performance in the Phipps, stalking and pouncing. Guarana, she stalked. Jeltran came from way off, and okay, yeah, she was beaten, whatever, 8 lengths to be third in the Acorn. But McKenzie was way back saving ground. You know, the horses that were inside and were back and then tipped out, like Hog Creek Hustle. If the track was so biased, how did Nitrous and Hog Creek Hustle rally from the back? I mean, did the pace collapse? Yeah, it did. But those horses came rallying wide. So the summary judgment on the big days they cooked the track. It's just an overreaction. It just tune out the noise and you know, dive in and understand and see and really figure out who you're going to bet back while they're jawboning on Twitter. Dive through the replays and the charts. and if you didn't make out on Saturday, you'll make out in 4 weeks. Okay. We'll get everybody whose opinion and insight really, you know, it doesn't have to be made 3 seconds after horses cross the wire. Would Tacitus have benefited you know, from a different kind of trip? Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the strategy of following War of Will may have been, you know, rethought later on. I think they were a little too caught up in, you know, let's follow War of Will. We'll stalk and pounce on him. Run, you know, instead of running their own race. And if that part, you know, keeping track of War of Will, if you don't worry about that, you know, you get back to basics like getting over as quickly as possible from the 10 hole. That's what Joel Rosario did from the 7. And that paid off pretty handsomely. So we'll talk to Mark Cassie about halfway through. He's got a bunch of things this morning, but 10:45-ish, Cassie will join us. We're looking forward to the follow-up to our conversation with him this week. Yeah, last week. It was, again, probably just as gratifying. Cassie, you know, I'm sure feels, you know, that whenever we talk to him about multiple horses, you're going to get the, it's like my children. You're going to get one of those. But it's really a nice moment for Tracy Farmer and that very familiar jacket. At the barbecue, I had made up the carpenter's room, made up these templates. They had a silks jacket silhouette, and I would paint them and decorated the barbecue with them. And one of them was Tracy Farmer's black jacket with the square. The white square and the white marks on the sleeve. A very familiar jacket. So he couldn't be there, unfortunately. He's not in the best of health. And we will, though, try to... I can't remember ever having Tracy Farmer on the show. So it would be terrific. I can tell you that, you know, and looking through the family, I look forward to talking to Sid on this topic. That family that he crafted Sir Winston from, well, there's a lot of people that contributed. The second dam had a fleet dancer. She was a weanling purchase, $150,000, and an affirmed daughter that John Kimmel trained. And then when she went into Tracy Farmer's Broodmare band, she produced La Grande Balladora that Andrew McKeever started and got her going, got her first half of her career, later on Mike Maker. Interestingly, both of, you know, it's interesting, a fleet dancer and La Grande Balladora, both of their final career wins was in the My Charmer at Turfway. Just kind of an interesting, I thought, sidebar. And then the mating with Awesome Again that produced Sir Winston. So the Triple Crown season, three different winners. Some quoting four different winners. And from there, we look to the second half of the year. The Haskell, we got the Dwyer and the Pegasus at Monmouth to lead in. Haskell, Jim Dandy, Travers, Pennsylvania Derby. The big three-year-old, the biggest of the three-year-old prizes, the grade ones, and plenty of regional activity in the other derbies, Iowa, Indiana, Ohio, etc., etc. West Virginia, Oklahoma, you name it. And a champion, the championship obviously is up in the air. All right. Steve Asmussen is going to join us after the first break because it was another. I mean, it's just been unbelievable. I mean, Chad Brown, obviously, with seven stake wins in the 3 days. Probably get a chance to talk to Chad later in the week. But the Asmussen barn just absolutely, week after week, hitting on all cylinders. And Mitoli's win. Mitoli was spectacular. And I leaned heavily on McKenzie, who, you know, had trouble, obviously, and was down inside. And Mike Smith didn't have seemingly too many options. But I'll tell you one thing. Take a watch of that replay again. There was a seam. Smith made the wrong decision. He had a chance to knife between Promises Fulfilled and Firenze Fire. He could have stayed. It must have been about the 2.5 path. And if he had, right as he was making the decision to go into the 2 path, the seam opened to his right, and he had already gone left. That was a fateful decision. If McKenzie was going to get to Mitoli to challenge late, he would have needed to have gone to his right and headed toward the 3, 3.5, and he might have gotten to him then. But Mitoli's story, amazing. A 108 buyer in the Met, and just great. Ricardo Santana Jr., the Highland Brats, the long-time clients for Steve Asmussen, who wins his second Met in a row. Was there a better, and I know some people are going to carry on about the non-call, the non-change in the Woody Stevens, but I'm sorry, I'm too happy for Vicky Foley. Hot Creek Hustle. Tremendous, tremendous. Catalina Cruiser rallied from off the pace. Oh, how did that happen? It was a bias. How could Catalina? Oh, how's that possible? Incredible. So much to dive into here. The two-year-olds and Gold Cup. I got a big show here. I'm not even going to tell you who's coming up. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You never call my name.
We're back. Recapping and starts up right now with Steve Asmussen, who I can't recap any of these Triple Crown Saturdays without a Steve Asmussen call. And the narrow miss in the Woody Stevens and the potential actually to get elevated with nitrous would have made three grade ones on Saturday, because, of course, the performance of Mattioli in the Met Mile and Midnight Bisou in the Ogden Phipps made it a terrific day for the Asmussen barn. Steve, congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's start with the big filly and Bisou. You know, a lot of people kind of thought that Come Dancing was going to be tough to reel in, especially, you know, people were carrying on about how speed favoring the track was. Talk about how you were approaching and what you thought Santana was needing to do with her.
Well, Mike Smith rides the suit, and
that's right. Excuse me. Yeah.
Right, and you know, the respect that Mike shows that mare, she responds to it. He knows her extremely well. Her one other run at Belmont Park was the Mother Goose last year. I think in the one-turn races, she is considerably closer and handier than her two-turn races for it. But she's been training exceptionally, and the proper adjectives to describe what a special mare Midnight Bisou are is hard to come up with.
Well, and four straight now going back to January, and as a four-year-old, just perfect. You mentioned the one-turn, two-turn scenario. Just pretty much left it in Mike's hands. Were there any, you know, was there any concern on your end about, you know, about Come Dancing getting away?
Well, those things are out of your control. I mean, you concern all the time. You're concerned with everything, the racetrack, the temperature, you know, concerned is, I think, our job, but a great amount of faith in the Midnight Bisou, and I thought she put in a tremendous performance and came out of it in beautiful shape.
Steve, is there anything about her now as a four-year-old, anything that's changed? I did hear one comment from you that sort of hinted that, you know, there's a maturity factor that really is starting to, you know, to really help her look so dominant at this point.
I think it's a culmination of consistency. You know, Scott been around and traveled with the mare for a long time now, and Angel's done a good job getting on her. And I think the filly just, she's went from a tremendously talented filly to a mare that expects to win and prepares to win. She's a true blessing.
Well, and it also is notable that, you know, this is third, let's see, 1, 2, 3, just going through the wins, second time at Belmont, 3. So she's won these stakes a minimum of five different racetracks. So that, and as you point out, one turn, two turn, she adjusts to whatever, you know, whatever scenario she encounters.
Right. I do feel that it was more of an Azari-type race this year than the Apple Blossom, as far as how Mike handled her and her needing acceleration and showing it, as opposed to kind of wearing them out.
Well, and you know, she... not to say she didn't meet with any resistance, but I mean, she basically just dropped down and drew off. I mean, it was visually impressive, and it sets her up for a, you know, a summer of you know, the big opportunities, obviously for Jeff Bloom and the team, Sal Kumin and partners, exciting, you know, to go and get on a roll like this and obviously be the, you know, the leader of the distaff division?
Yes, we're obviously very proud of what she's accomplished in the first half of the year, but as you know, there's plenty left for us, and we have a very big second half of the year planned for us.
Well, and a couple of thoughts. I mean, things, you know, the Saratoga summer obviously presents the, you know, the obvious big targets. Anything, you know, anything else that we should know about?
Well, I think the first thing we all need to know about is sorting out where the Breeders' Cup will be run this
year.
And,
yep.
I think that our focus is on horses of this rare quality and taking care of them. So hopefully everything gets sorted out and everybody has a level of confidence that is required to race horses of this caliber.
Steve, you're obviously hinting at things here, and you know, it's not as if she hasn't been successful out west either. So it's not a question of you know, preferring one surface to another. You're kind of indicating a preference.
Traveling is not the issue,
right?
You know, just doing whatever's best for the horse.
You have a message to project for the Breeders' Cup committee?
No, I'm not there. I'm not there.
All right.
So, not on it. Don't have a horse on it. No opinion.
All right. Let's
concerned as everybody else is.
Well, and a point well made, and we'll get to that as the morning progresses and the week. Let's talk about the Woody Stevens. We'll do this progressively as the afternoon unfolded. And, you know, your thoughts on what was going on there, and you were, you know, Santana certainly got him in position. Should Hot Creek Hustle have been disqualified, you know, you were right there to be anointed.
I thought Nitrous ran his best race to date. He is a beautiful son of Tappet out of a very nice Carson City mare. Mr. Winchell's sold half of him to Stone Street. Nice partnership, and that win would have meant a great deal to us. But I was very proud of his performance. I thought the horse flew home late. If anything, he came home on that racetrack as fast as anybody the whole day. And as we know, it was quite a showcase of talent on Saturday. And I thought he made us proud. But we've got, you know, we still have a couple opportunities left this year for him to get his grade one. And we're looking forward to that day.
Well, and obviously the Alan Jerkins, the best grade one for the one turners that's lying ahead, and move toward that. You know, this also is this performance and Nitrous's progress, Steve, you know, really another indication of these horses that come out of Oaklawn and wherever they go, whether it's Churchill and Pimlico and then here in New York, you know, they come out running. They come off that winter.
Well, with the purses that they've accumulated at Hot Springs, it takes a better horse to get the majority portion of them. So with Midnight Bassoo and Nitrous, both and Matoli wintering at Oaklawn, and they make races awfully tough with that level of ability in them.
Well, the Matoli story gets more and more interesting and more a testimony to the horsemanship involved in, you know, getting a horse to stretch out. We've been talking about him, you know, time and time again, Steve. The pride that you've got to have and the pleasure in getting the Hollingbrots a win like this, I can only imagine.
I think you touched it, the pride, have this special of a horse for the Heidelbros, as much as they've meant to the whole barn, from our early days when the whole stable was in Texas to the point we are now, and what a brilliant horse Matoli is. And other than the pure euphoria of Midnight Basu winning and Matoli winning the Met Miles, probably the coolest part of my day Saturday was watching Matoli, McKenzie, and Thunder Snow cool out in the test barn. The level of ability that was, and just how cool those horses were, is one of the lasting memories I have from Belmont Stakes Day.
That's awesome, because, you know, it's over there, and you know, you come up the tunnel, and after they leave the track, and, you know, you mentioned the test barn, and they walk around, and, you know, they do what they got to do. That's cool, Steve, that you went back there.
That was a moment that I'll cherish, because those three men, after a race like that, looked like they were headed to the paddock and they were ready to do it again. It was very impressive. I was in awe of all three of those horses.
Talk about your view of Matoli as the, you know, as it became obvious, or when you recognized that you had the opportunity to make him, you know, into this kind of horse.
We realize how fortunate we are to have the ability that he has, and for him to the maturity that he's shown. He just came back training so good this year, and we had originally considered taking him to Dubai to run him in the Golden Sheen, but he had just reached a new level and just felt that a race like Saturday and what it means was within his scope, and for him to get it done with the field that showed up is amazing.
Strategically, what were the thoughts going in, you know, knowing that Cold Front, you know, down inside was going to probably be forward? McKenzie, I thought Smith, you know, had his options after the break. And then, of course, there was the speed outside. What were you thinking going in, and what did you discuss with Ricardo?
Well, my beliefs are and always have been, if you get from point A to point B as fast as you can, the rest of it will take care of itself. We love the rhythm that he was in. We like how he was training. We liked how he was thinking, you know, and you let him be who he is. I think that getting out of his way is the biggest key to the success Matoli's had.
Nice. And, you know, I think everybody, you know, after the Churchill Downs performance, I think that was the eye opener that said, "Boy, if he's gonna sit like this and move on cue, he's going to be very effective at this trip." Watching the race,
he has a very special demeanor. He is relaxed and confident at the same time. He wastes zero energy. And he's just an excellent athlete. I mean, he's light on his feet, but he is not overly aggressive. He's just capable.
You know, I know that you're talking about the grade one sprint opportunities at Saratoga, but Steve, watching him run and, you know, watching him as he matures, can he go two turns? Is that something that you guys would like to get to at some point?
I think that the Met Mile proves what we all wanted to prove, and I think the significance of the Met Mile, let alone with the Thunder Snow and McKenzie, yep, as well as the rest of the field showing up, is I think right now we go forward, and a little of it will have to do with financial opportunity and what is best for him long term. We had targeted this race from a long ways out, and for him to come through for us, we want to regroup, pet on him, love on him a little bit, and make sure everything's exactly where we want it before we decide what is next.
Well, the performance spoke for itself, as you indicate, with the kind of field it was and the way in which he, you know, attended the square pace and then able, you know, to hold off any late threats. And Mattoli, what is it, seven straight now? 7 straight, Steve.
He unbelievable. A lot of fun to run.
Well, about as complete and about as good a Saturday at this level as any operation can have. And Steve, they're piling up this year, aren't they?
Well, if you get the lead Midnight Basu over in Mattoli, you're going to have a lot of good days.
Well, and you know, there were other runners, but I will say one thing: it was, you had to feel good. What was it on? Was that on Friday or Thursday that broke the ice? I know that Toby had a big smile after a tough start to the meet.
We had a nice winner on Friday early in the day, and that success has a lot to do with who you get the lead over.
Well, I saw Toby later, and I think there was a big sigh of relief. It was a great way to get into Saturday after that win, and it's been really a tremendous run. Steve, there's some big things also lying ahead. Let's talk about Saturday back at Churchill too, right? You got two or three chances, I think, on that card.
We are very, very fortunate to be in a position to have great horses, and look forward to running She's a Julie this week in the Fleur de Lis, as well as Limonite in the Matt Wynn, and Tenfold in the Stephen Foster, and Hot Springs in the Wise Dam.
Excellent. All right, and it's funny because I forgot about Tenfold, and he was not on Darren's list actually for the Foster.
Well, I hadn't shared that until now.
Well, there we go. All right, so the Pimlico special winner heads for the Stephen Foster, only enhancing Saturday night's 9:47 feature. Steve, it's going great, and that was a special, really. The Stevens, I know you would have liked to have won the Stevens. I'm sure you've been competing against Vicky Foley a long time, and I'm sure you're as happy in that way for her to have a kind of a career-defining opportunity with a win like that. And then Mattoli and Midnight Bisou make it special. So well done, and good luck this weekend.
Thank you very much.
Steve Asmussen, and the barn just has been an absolute terror through the Triple Crown. I mean, New York Central, right, in the Maryland Sprint, and Tenfold, and there you go, Tenfold adding his name to a very good Foster out of this world. Let's see, because Giftbox, we'll talk to John Sadler later, Giftbox, Quip, Yoshida, Tom's the Tot, Silver Dust, Seeking the Soul, Rated R Superstar, King Zachary, Exulting, Draft Pick, and now we're getting into a situation where there may be an AE. Wait, we got 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 13 right now, potentially, for the Foster. And, of course, She's a Julie, who got her grade one at the Derby undercards, and I may have to go back. Who was the other? I didn't see him. I got to check on the Wise Dan. Who it was? Who did he throw in on the Wise Dan? That one also is a new name. So Kevin Gerstein, if you're listening, you can add a couple of names to the to the probables for Saturday night and the Foster night. Let's take a break here, and Nick Luck is going to make his first public appearance in a while, since Preakness, after a little bit of a health scare, as it were, and he's back, and he's going to be on TV on Sunday. He'll be back on Luck on Sunday, and then swings right into Royal Ascot, and a chance to talk to Nick Luck before Johnny D joins us. Johnny, after Nick, and then Mark Cassie. John Sadler, Dave Grenig. Get Dave's take on everything that went on as well. Let's take a break here. Nick Luck joins us next as we recap the Belmont Racing Festival. We'll get some of particularly the turf interpretation from Nick. Haven't talked about the Gold Cup yet, the 2 mile race, and we'll get a little everything. And just going to be good to talk to Nick after he threw a scare into everybody. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breads on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, 15 minutes to the top of the hour, and Steve Asmussen breaking some news and taking some bows for the myriad of terrific performances, most notably division leaders Midnight Bisou in the Phipps and Matoli in the Met Mile. And speaking of division leaders in the presentation game, it is just a pleasure to get Nick Luck back out into the public domain after an unnerving Twitter message a few weeks ago after Pimlico sidelined with a health scare, but now back and up and about and getting ready for Royal Ascot. Nick, so glad you're okay.
Thank you very much, Steve. Yes, I had a nasty brush there on my return from Baltimore, but there's absolutely no truth in the rumor that this was in any way brought on by the effects of the Preakness infield. I can assure you that I think this might have been coming on beforehand. So, yes, I, without wishing to bore everyone with the full medical detail, he ended up having to have some emergency surgery, but I'm back in play and looking forward to Royal Ascot, and was very, very sorry to miss the Belmont Stakes and watched it at home with a mixture of admiration for my colleagues and frustration that I couldn't be there. But I know that I've been a very, very, very lucky boy indeed. So I just want to thank everybody, particularly all my friends at NBC, for all the lovely messages and support they've shown through the last couple of weeks. And I feel good again now. So looking forward to Ascot.
Well, you sound strong and getting back and back into the swing just in time. And, of course, the new season of your Sunday morning show, Luck on Sunday, you've had a guest host for the first 2 weeks, but you're going to be back in the saddle on Sunday.
Yeah, I am. I'm looking forward to getting back. Tom, Stanley and Rishi Prasad have done their usual admirable job. And I'm sure there are people thinking, do we have to have it back? But I'm going to be back this Sunday, and I'm really looking forward to it, because I've got Jeremy Nazida joining me on Sunday, and he just announced his surprise retirement from training. And so many of your listeners, Steve, will remember him from his exploits in the US, particularly his amazing win in the 2004 Breeders' Cup Juvenile at Lone Star Park with Wilco, who was one of only two UK-based runners of that year's Breeders' Cup, and they both won, Wilco and Ouija Board. So he's had many great moments stateside, but I think that probably is finest hour. And he's a very talented man to be hanging up his boots, but things haven't been easy for him the last few years. And given that he's a man of independent financial means, I think he felt that he just wanted to walk away, even if it was temporarily.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because it did get kind of lost in the crush of Triple Crown and Belmont Week coverage and discussion. So Jeremy Noseda Sunday on Luck on Sunday, and then the focus will turn to Royal Ascot.
Yeah, and I'm just so thrilled that this is an event now that is seen as a real heritage property by NBC, and it's an absolute honor and privilege to be able to be a part of bringing it into American households in the morning. And I know a lot of people enjoy it over breakfast time on the East Coast, a little bit earlier if you're on the West Coast. But it's just great that it's grown in interest in the U.S. And there's nowhere I go when I come and work with you, Steve, where people don't say, what do you got for Royal Ascot? Looking forward to Ascot, which is fantastic, and really thrilled as well that Brittany and Eddie Olchek and Dylan Dreyer are going to come and enjoy it with me this year. So, fingers crossed that it's slightly cheerier week weather-wise than it is at the moment in the London area. I'm just driving around the M25 as I'm speaking to you, and it's been torrential all day. So. I'm sure Wesley Ward and many others will be hoping that it dries up before next week.
Well, and Wesley, a full frontal assault, including Maven, the American Pharaoh that he scratched the other day out of the two-year-old stake, and is going to take with his, you know, with his arsenal, and will obviously get together, Nick, ahead of Royal Ascot, as we always do. But you mentioned a couple of ideas. In fact, you're giving me to talk about the weekend racing, and I want to talk about the grass racing first. And one thing that popped in my head immediately when I knew I was going to talk to you is to ask about Bricks and Mortar, that performance, his most recent outstanding performance, and the win in the Manhattan. And clearly the target will be the Arlington Million this summer. But beyond that, Chad Brown indicating that he doesn't want to go a mile and a half with him in the Breeders' Cup. Wouldn't he be a candidate for the Champion Stakes at Ascot in October?
I think it's a really interesting call, that, Steve, for a number of reasons. As you say, the trainer doesn't want to go a mile and a half. He's going to have to give him a break at some point, but then he'll want to bring him back in the fall. Everybody's been talking about Chad Brown at some point bringing a horse to Europe. We thought maybe it would be Newspaper of Record, but that bubble, if it's not quite burst, at least doesn't look quite as healthy as it did. So maybe this is a good spot. A mile and a quarter at Ascot, albeit a stiff mile and a quarter, in October for Bricks and Mortar. And normally you'd worry with an American-based horse that the ground 4 times out of 5 at Ascot in October would be too soft. But we saw how well he handled that down in Florida, and we saw he handled rain, soft, and turf well in Kentucky as well. Now, admittedly, this is likely to be deeper rather than just wet on top, but the fact that he's proved versatile on different going is a big tick in that box. Also, from a bloodstock point of view, I think he's an interesting runner in Europe. He's from one of the last crops of Giants Causeway. He's free of Sadler's Wells and Danehill blood, so he'd be a decent outcross for virtually every Group 1 winning mare in Europe. He's quite an interesting prospect as a breeding proposition, I would have thought, in Europe, as well as an interesting prospect for that race, which is unusually well endowed in terms of its turf as well. The British Champion Stakes is £1.2 million added, so it doesn't look out of place amongst the world's richer races. So there'd be a financial incentive as well. So I don't think that's a bad call at all, Steve.
Well, and we know at some point Chad Brown is going to have to look to those kinds of opportunities, and looking forward to getting his thoughts on it. Let's touch on, you know, the other turf stakes, and Chad dominated 5 turf stake wins, but one race that he didn't participate, the 2 Mile Gold Cup. And talk about Boti and Ahmad, who, you know, I thought ended up being a great value. I enjoyed Friday, did much better Friday than Saturday, and Ahmad really made it happen.
Yeah, this is an interesting horse for his main target, which is the Melbourne Cup, the race that he's been bought for. And I thought he showed the right sort of attributes for that race, because essentially for the Melbourne Cup, you need obviously a strong stayer because it's 2 miles, but you need a stayer with a turn of foot. And that's what he showed, because although Ben Curtis was attempting to do the right thing by messing the pace around up front on Mota Sadir and going hard, then dabbing on the brake pedal and trying to control the fractions, essentially he was always vulnerable to a horse who had a turn of speed. And I think Ahmad has got a relative turn of speed for a stayer, which is what you need in the Melbourne Cup, which, even though it's got a big field, can often be a tactically run race. So I think he's got the right attributes for it, and he was bought by OTI Racing to run in that race, but he picked up a pretty nice pot along the way, and you can see in the aftermath of the race how much it meant to the Boti family. Boti's a legendary Italian racing family. Another sign of that generation. Cousin Marco, you'll know all about, trained very successfully in the UK as well, and has had significant success in the US. So, a fine triumph for them, and I enjoy the race, and I hope it's there to stay.
It really feels like it, and I think even, you know, I think the American horse player that doesn't typically get a chance, Nick, to look at those races and try to figure out, you know, an angle on them and an approach. I think it's a great introduction, you know, to some of the things that we do see at the various stands. Whether it's over the flat or even over the jumps, it's a great way to kind of reach out to, you know, some of the international betting opportunities.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if there was one point about racing in the US that perhaps people who don't instinctively love it would criticize, is that there's a lack of diversity. And if you have a few more distance races, then that increases the diversity, and perhaps that's a good thing. It's not a view I necessarily subscribe to, but then I'm the converted, so I don't need preaching to. But I like it. I enjoy the race, and much as I enjoy the staying races at Ascot next week, even though I appreciate that they don't necessarily throw out the classiest horses.
You know, there's also a feature here to include an opportunity to mention that Flavian Pratt just excels at every turn, and he can adapt to, you know, really any kind of horse, it seems. And he's a, you know, we hear so often about the Ortiz brothers, rightly so. They each won three stakes over the 3-day festival, but Flavian Pratt continues to impress. I don't know what their plans are. Derek Lawson has hinted at coming east with Pratt, and he's going to be a star for years to come.
Oh, without a doubt. And the one thing that seems to bond all these French jockeys that are now based in the U.S., their ability to get horses to settle and switch off, race kindly for them, essentially conserve energy, something they do extremely effectively. It's, I think, something born out of the way that French races tend to be run. They tend to be run rather more falsely than races in England or Ireland. They tend to place more emphasis on the final part of the race, being able to run fast through the final part of the race, conserve energy, rather than the horse that's just galloping on the lead slowly. So I think American racing is well suited to jockeys who, or American surf racing, I should say, is well suited to the jockeys who've honed their craft in France, as you're seeing now with Giroux and Pratt and Julien Leperoux and what have you.
A couple of other before we talk about the Belmont and wrap up your thoughts on the Triple Crown this year. Couple of performances I haven't mentioned yet. Rushing Fall in the Just a Game. She's just exciting and seems like the kind of horse that Chad Brown particularly excels with. We had the Turf Sprint and World of Trouble just is churning out these performances. And it does feel like he is that much better on, like Mike Dubb has indicated, that he thinks he's just a better turf sprinter than dirt sprinter, as good as he is on the dirt. There were also a couple of performances going all the way back to Thursday, significant form in the Intercontinental, and Newspaper of Records upset again. I didn't get much of a chance to talk about it yet at all, Nick. But, you know, losing to her stablemate, Cambier Park, she just doesn't seem to have that same spark that made her so dominant at two.
Well, the problem for me, Steve, is that I feel I can't really judge her until she runs the race where she's not trying to do everything upside down. And until she settles properly, you can't really judge how much ability she's retained. Because I don't care how good a horse is, when they're that keen and that rank, they're just not giving themselves any chance at all. It's been suggested to me that she's a sprinter, but there's nothing in her pedigree doesn't really suggest she's a sprinter. you know, she's from a family that's had its page augmented in the last 2 years by La Trobe, the Irish Derby winner, and Pink Dogwood, who nearly won the Oaks the other day and might well have done, but for not making a ground up in the hottest part of the race. So her pedigree doesn't tell me that she's a sprinter. And her victory in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf didn't tell me she was a sprinter, I don't think. So I think it's more a question of her being given a chance and being, I don't know how, but in some way, I think they've got to try and get her to switch off, drop ahead, wherever it is in the race, and allow her to race more kindly and conserve her energy properly. And then we'll have some kind of idea what sort of ability she retains. Until she does that, it's very hard to judge how good she still is.
Fair, you know, fair points. How about the other ones? Rushing Fall, you know, she feels like she fits in the discussion at the highest level at this point.
Yeah, another good bit of training, isn't it, with her? I mean, I know it's easier to bide your time when you've got a whole barn full of Grade One beautifully bred horses, but you know, it's a classic example of when things weren't quite right, just biding your time and the rewards will come. And we've seen Chad Brown do it with any number of horses, and it's worked again. And there's just the nice thing for them is that there's so many opportunities now for her as well. That's the point. If you're going to flip, you began this conversation by asking whether you thought that Brixton Mortar maybe could come for something like the Champion Stakes. If you flip the coin, you'd think, well, all those races that Naira have put on worth a whole ton of money for turf horses between now and the fall of Belmont and Saratoga might attract a few European horses. No doubt they will. But if you're a European trainer now, you're thinking, well, to what extent do I want to go into Chad Brown's backyard and take him on? Much as I'm sure Chad sees Aidan O'Brien finishing first, second, and third in Group 1 races here and thinks, do I want to go and stick my best horses into that?
You know, that's a great point, and it actually is a little alarming in the way you couch that too, Nick, because Naira and, you know, specifically Martin Pan's a big part of that turf triple concept, and even the Belmont Derby and Belmont Oaks was based on his expectation and his anticipation of drawing international participation. So that's notable that you say this. I mean, because if they're not going to go to the trouble and expense because they know they're going to potentially run into the Chad Brown buzzsaw, that would put a little bit of a damper on the concept.
Yeah, possibly, but at least I don't think you can be. You can't have it both ways. On one hand, you want international participation because we all enjoy it. Sound very self-serving saying that. On the other hand, you want the overall quality of your animal to be going up, and there's no doubt that the overall standard of turf horses seems to be on the increase, largely thanks to the raw material that Chad Brown is sourcing. Yeah, these are not necessarily horses that are coming ready-made from Europe or with a European foundation. Oftentimes he's going out and buying, you know, really beautifully bred yearlings with magnificent turf pedigrees, and is taking them from cradle right the way through their careers. So it means, I think, that when you get, say, to Breeders' Cup time, you're not talking about turf races as a foregone conclusion for European horses, especially if they're running sub a mile and a half. So I think that's a good thing. If the international competition is more even in that discipline, then
we'll see how it plays out. Well, beside the racing that we saw on the grass, I want to get your take on the feature. Obviously, you tracked through Derby and Preakness and didn't get a chance to, you know, to kind of get the feel for what was going on leading into the week. But, you know, what were your thoughts going into Belmont and then how the race unfolded?
Well, I was hoping that War of Will might win. Sentimentally, I thought Tacitus would win, and unlike at least one good friend of mine, I didn't see Sir Winston coming. But come he did. It was an unusually tightly packed cluster for a Belmont Stakes, testament to a slightly muddling pace. I don't think the race, I mean, as Andy Sterling and others have pointed out extensively, the race didn't really pan to suit Tacitus. He covered a lot of ground on a day when it wasn't, the track wasn't really playing that way, and he was asked to race wide and a bit far back off a muddling gallop. But having said that, if he'd been the sort of horse that I thought he was coming into the Triple Crown series, I still think he should have picked it up anyway, notwithstanding a more moderate trip than the winner, who got an exceptional ride. So, in a sense, for all he might go on and win more races, he can be counted maybe the best horse on the day. I was still a bit disappointed from a purist point of view that he couldn't get the job done against what didn't look like a vintage bunch of horses. And I think War of Wills probably just left his race behind, a combination of the Derby and the Preakness, and didn't really stay either. But still, the three-year-old narrative remains interesting, even if there's not much to choose between them all.
Well, and that'll sort itself out as we move toward Monmouth for Haskell and Saratoga for Travers and Parks for Pennsylvania Derby, because three grade ones remain.
Yeah,
and you know,
you do sort of feel, don't you, that you do feel that Monmouth and Parks might hold the key to where the dominant three-year-old performance is going to come from. And on what we've seen in the Triple Crown races, can anyone really say that it's going to be a horse other than Maximum Security if he comes back in that Derby first pass to post form? It's hard to imagine that he isn't going to be the dominant horse. The more you look back at that, the more impressive the performance was. For all the drama subsequent to it, shrouded the actual merit of what he achieved.
Well, and that kind of leads into the way to put a bow on the 5 weeks, that's an interesting perspective. I did see a story that Jason Service.
Of course, I was remiss of me, of course, Steve, not to couch that by saying Colts. You know, because I've obviously not mentioned the sort of three count filly performance of last weekend, so. Yeah, I'm talking about the Colts division specifically.
Sure, sure, and we'll see where it goes, the horse that is seemingly lost in all of this, unfortunately for him, is Country House. I keep hearing everybody was talking Saturday night after the race and then yesterday, you're talking about, well, the Maximum Security and this one and War of Will, and this one's going to definitely, Omaha Beach, we have to catch up on him and see where Mandela is and how close he is to being back in full training. But you feel like Country House is the one that, that was figuring to have a big second half anyway. Nobody really expected him to run as big as he did on Derby Day. And so I suppose if there's a odds line on the three-year-old champion, he's probably the longest price amongst the glittery three-year-olds.
Yeah, and far be it from me to naysay Bill Mott, but it's entirely possible that Country House is a better horse than even his connection think he is. I know he said don't forget about him in the lead-up to the Derby, but there was no doubt if you talked to those close to the barn who they felt was their best shot. And, you look back at the Belmont Stakes, and you think, well, where would Country House have landed up? The horse essentially looked a pretty stout galloper, turning up to try and confirm form against a somewhat motley crew by Triple Crown race standards. You'd have thought that he'd have been right there in the mix. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see when he turns up and where he turns up.
Well, we know where Nick Luck is going to turn up. It's going to be on Luck on Sunday this week, and then all eyes turn to the Royal Ascot coverage. Racing starts a week from tomorrow on the 18th and goes through till Saturday, of course. We'll bring lots of coverage here. We'll play lots of races. It's become one of our favorite weeks, really, of the whole year. The chance to watch and enjoy, and American audiences through the courtesy and of NBC has really made Royal Ascot. I in some ways it's taken the place, at least for me, Nick, in my life, the way we used to look forward to Wimbledon. Look forward.
Well,
to...
I think my bosses at NBC would be delighted to hear you say that, because I think, again, as I said, it's a I don't want to use the word quintessentially, because it's used far too often, but I'm going to say it anyway. It is that quintessentially British sporting event, and but most importantly, the quality of the sport has got better and better, because it's been an event that has just been well curated over the last decade to make sure that it keeps pace, and hopefully purses will increase commensurate with that to make sure that there is more of an incentive for more global horses to come and race. And it gives me a big thrill when American horses race at Ascot. I'm sorry there aren't more trainers represented this year, but hopefully that's just a quirk of fate rather than a trend, and all power to Wesley Ward, frankly.
Well, when will we get a chance to preview?
We've sometimes and Joe Orsino, not to forget Joe Orsino.
That's right.
As well.
That's right. Joe O's coming. When can we talk? Do you think Friday or Monday? I know that you've got your preview schedule to deal with.
Friday is great. I think Monday is going to be flat out. It tends to get busier and busier every year. That's the day before now. So yeah, Friday would be good, Steve. Look forward to chatting to you then.
Well, this was perfect, and I'm delighted that At the Races could bring Nick out and get him rolling toward the weekend and toward Royal Ascot, and we'll bookend basically the week. Nick Luck on Monday, and then again Friday to preview Royal Ascot. Nick, thanks so much.
Pleasure, Steve, as always. Take care.
Nick Luck, everybody, and you follow him, N-I-C-K, L-U-C-K, Nick Luck. We'll follow Nick with another accent. That's my theory. I actually ran into Garrett O'Rourke and friends, his wife and others on, I guess that was Friday, in Carmen Barrera's office, and I provided my theory that the show is always enhanced by foreign accents. And so you'll get one from South Philly next. Johnny D, back after this. Mark Cassie in a half hour.